Good morning. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. And we're continuing our Meet a Mayor series this morning with the mayor of Green Bay, Eric Genrich. He's here to answer your questions about the city and his role in it at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us, ideas@wpr.org. Do you live in Green Bay? What questions do you have for your mayor about how the city's being run? Call us this morning, 1-800-642-1234. Eric Genrich was elected mayor of Green Bay in 2019. He previously served three terms in the state assembly, representing a Green Bay district. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, Lee. Thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate your time this morning. And I want to start with the heavy hearts around the state, around the nation this morning, with the five dead after the Waukesha Christmas parade on Sunday evening. And want to get your reaction to it.
Yeah, well, like everybody in the state and country, sending my thoughts and prayers and love to the people of Waukesha and those affected. You know, we just had our Christmas parade this past Saturday, so I think we can all, you know, sort of put ourselves in that position and recognize all of the joy and fun and you know, warm feelings everyone was experiencing, and then for that to be interrupted with that horrible tragedy is just it's unimaginable. So certainly thinking of all those folks down in Waukesha and also thinking of our friends down in Appleton who are having their Christmas parade this evening. And I know are going to be doing a very touching tribute to those that were impacted.
Mayor Genrich, take us behind the scenes and give us some idea what it's like to plan, organize, and orchestrate parades like these.
Yeah, you know, there's a ton, obviously, that goes into the logistical preparations involved. Ours is really orchestrated by our downtown business improvement district, downtown Green Bay. So they're the ones that sort of take the lead in organizing it and rounding up sponsors. But we also have a special events committee and a special events coordinator within the mayor's office. And so that's the team that runs through all of the safety concerns. We have representation from our police and fire and our risk manager. And a whole host of others across the organization to make sure that, you know, all of the safety protocols are in place and the appropriate barriers are placed to prevent some of these things from happening. But, you know, the reality is you can do everything that you need to do and should be doing, and you can still, you know, experience a horrible tragedy like we witnessed down in Waukesha.
Do the public safety aspects enter your mind on a Saturday night before the Sunday night tragedies? Is that something you look around and see where the roadblocks are and how it's all set up?
You know, I'd be lying if I said that's where my mind was at Saturday morning, but I know that's what our police department and our fire department are oftentimes thinking. Our Department of Public Works, you know, who's involved in placing a lot of the barriers and vehicles sometimes that act as barriers. So, you know, I was focused on kind of welcoming the crowd and doing those sorts of things. But we certainly have the professionals in place that are always vigilant to those kinds of concerns.
Our guest, the mayor of Green Bay, Eric Genrich, joining us this morning, taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234 or emails ideas@wpr.org. So would public gatherings like the holiday parade in Waukesha or the protests against police in Kenosha last August in 2020 something that you as a mayor worry about increasingly?
What specifically is your question?
Well, are these public gatherings now, is this something you are concerned with? I know you've got a new police chief in Green Bay, Chris Davis, as of September, and how do you coordinate public safety?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we welcome all sorts of peaceful public gatherings in the city of Green Bay, and we've experienced them, you know, many times historically, and even more so recently, as you said, in the wake of the killing of George Floyd. A lot of demonstrations occurred in the city of Green Bay, 99.9% peaceful, and so, you know, by and large had a good experience with that. Our former police chief, Andrew Smith, was very clear in saying that we welcome, we support public demonstrations as long as they're done peacefully, and that's certainly the case with our new chief as well, Chris Davis. And from my point of view, you know, that's the kind of thing that we want to see in Green Bay, not just people exercising their free speech rights, but all kinds of public gatherings and events. I think we're known as a community that welcomes those kinds of experiences, especially in our downtown, on our river. And so we want to make sure that, people continue to feel safe and welcomed and protected.
Along those same lines, earlier this year, the police in Green Bay began wearing body cameras. And I'm wondering how you've seen this new technology being used. The city's investing over $2.5 million in the system, and that includes a $700,000 donation from the Green Bay Packers. What have you seen with the body camera wearing so far, Mr. Mayor?
First of all, just very appreciative for that support that you mentioned from the Green Bay Packers. A lot of generosity directed towards us, but also the village of Ashwaubenon and our Brown County sheriffs to allow for all three entities to implement the wearing of body cameras in these communities. And so that we have, you know, we have appreciated them to this point. I know the chief really likes the fact that we have them in place. You know, there's something also called replay coaching that's involved, which I know has been welcome, so that, you know, our officers and folks in our command staff can take a look at routine incidents or incidents where we feel like, you know, things could have gone differently, to really provide, you know, that feedback, you know, from our more seasoned officers who have seen some more things, maybe a little bit more experienced, can kind of coach up our new officers and help them improve the way that they're policing in the community. So, yeah, so thus far have really appreciated the fact that we have that technology in place.
And that goes along the lines with the Green Bay's 2022 budget, which was approved last week by the City Council. It also includes more than $23.5 million from the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA funds. And Mayor Genrich, how did the city ultimately decide to use these one-time federal funds?
So we're still really in the process of determining that. We had a couple of town hall meetings that touched on both the city budget and our ARPA allocation. So I had some in-person and virtual participation there. But then we also received 700-plus responses to our online survey that was specifically about the ARPA allocation. In terms of how it was used in our city budget, we only used, I think it's about a little over 2%. Of our allocation, $655,000 to pay for some one-time equipment replacements and repairs, things of that sort that were handled in our 2022 budget. The balance of that, however, remains to be spent. So we'll be having that conversation again at our finance committee meeting on November 30th, bringing forward kind of an overarching framework to govern how we're going to spend those dollars, but also want to allow time for our department heads, department staff, and alders to really dig into some of those details and help us shape the specifics on how we're going to respond. But in terms of that framework, you know, what we're looking at is a big chunk of that, you know, that allocation, roughly in the $10 million neighborhood, being spent on a lot of our infrastructural needs. We're able to use that $10 million a bit more flexibly than the rest of the allocation because it's related to our revenue loss calculation, you know, based on how much revenue the city lost because of the pandemic. So we're able to use that $10 million to really invest in, you know, some of the roads and bridges and, you know, reconstructions, resurfacings that people really recognize need to take place here in the city. The next largest allocation would be directed towards housing and economic development, especially directed towards those neighborhoods that have been disproportionately impacted by COVID-19 and the downturn in the economy. So that's in the neighborhood of $6 million, $3 million for stormwater infrastructure, both kind of larger projects, but then also programs targeted towards individuals and businesses that are interested in investing in green infrastructure, public safety, violence prevention, violence interruption, another big bucket that I'm suggesting in the area of about $2 million, and then tourism promotion specifically to some of our arts and culture activities for about $1 million.
Meet a mayor this morning on The Morning Show. Our guest, the mayor of Green Bay, Eric Genrich, taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. What would you like Mayor Genrich to do about police reform, climate change, or affordable housing in Green Bay? You can share your suggestions with us this morning, and the mayor of Green Bay himself, Eric Genrich, as our conversation continues. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Meet a mayor this morning on The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And this morning, we're talking with the mayor of Green Bay, Eric Genrich, and taking your calls. We'll look at a city's plan to invest their ARPA funds and inviting you to join us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email always ideas at WPR.org. Are you happy with how Green Bay has handled the pandemic? What more would you like the mayor to do to help Green Bay recover? Taking your calls, and there are also questions surrounding the continuing Republican complaints over the outcome of the 2020 election and the future of Wisconsin's election integrity. Mayor Genrich, before the break, you were talking about how you would propose to spend some of these federal ARPA funds, and that includes $6 million on housing and economic development. Green Bay is not alone in struggling to meet housing needs right now. A 2020 study by the Green Bay Redevelopment Authority concluded that the city needs to add more than 7,000 housing units over the next 20 years. Just give us some idea, Mayor Genrich, of how the lack of housing has affected Green Bay.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the housing study that was conducted back in 2020, and that really is sort of the city's roadmap forward. We have some ambitious goals, but we've also seen a lot of projects move forward recently. At our most recent meeting of the Redevelopment Authority, there was a project that was approved to provide around 230 units. 80% of that would be targeted towards folks at 60%. Of our median income. It's a really high quality project in our rail yard district. So near downtown, just on the west side of the river in the On Broadway Business Improvement District. We also have some development agreements that were just recently signed back this summer. Both of these projects are market rate ones. One in our shipyard development, also on the west side of town on the river, 220 units approved there. And then on the east side, about 72 units of market rate housing on North Monroe Avenue, also with space for a downtown grocery store and hopefully a presence for UWGB as well. So we're certainly making progress, but we've got a lot in front of us. Also interested in doing whatever we can, to motivate developers to do business in the city of Green Bay. If there are certain regulations or red tape or zoning issues that are slowing things down, also very open to figuring out what we can do to break down some of those barriers, because we know that the communities that are growing, that are providing adequate and affordable and high quality housing, are the really successful ones across the state and nation, and we want to be in that category.
Mayor of Green Bay, Eric Genrich. Maddie from DePere joins us over the phone this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Maddie, you're on The Morning Show with the mayor of Green Bay, Eric Genrich. Good morning.
Good morning. I heard that the man who ran those people down in Waukesha had previously used that same vehicle to run down the mother of his child, but he was allowed out at $1,000 bail. What are you and the city doing to address domestic violence? I hope the district attorney and judge, whoever allowed that man out on $1,000 bail, will be held accountable.
Maddie, thank you. Mayor Genrich, what are you doing to tackle the issue of domestic violence?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm very supportive of the organizations in the city of Green Bay that are doing that work. Golden House is probably the most prominent provider of those services for women and families and other individuals that are impacted by domestic violence. Our police department as well, hugely supportive of Golden House. It's an area of focus for the federal government as well. There was an allocation of housing assistance sent directly to the city of Green Bay as a result of the American Rescue Plan Act. And I know that those, the federal government would really love for us to partner with entities like Golden House and others to provide housing for individuals impacted by violence in their homes. So we're doing whatever we can to support those individuals and those entities. But again, just a horrible tragedy witnessed down in Waukesha.
Maddie, thank you for your call. Mayor Genrich, I want to return to the city's approved budget last week for 2022 and what that means in terms of property taxes for the residents of Green Bay. It's being referred to as a modest increase in taxes. Can you explain what that will mean?
Yeah, so a less than a 1% increase in our mill rate. You know, that's really thanks to, in part, to this federal allocation of ARPA resources. As I said, you know, used a very, very small amount of our overall allocation, but $655,000 for those one-time expenses to keep that mill rate down. But it's also because we've been very fiscally prudent in our last couple budgets. My first two budgets that I proposed, you know, we eliminated, you know, one-time spending and really just tried to be as wise as we possibly could with our needs and budgeting appropriately for them. So the first two were, you know, a little bit more difficult than this one, but I think this one, you know, was as widely accepted as it was. It was voted 10-2 by our common council because of those, you know, more challenging budgets that we were able to pass the past 2 years.
It's a property tax increase of about 10 cents per $1,000 in property value, as I understand it, Mayor Genrich?
Yeah, so it's a little bit less than that.
Okay.
after it went all the way through our common council process. But yeah, less than $20 for a $200,000 home, if you will.
And as I understand it, one of the line items that saw a big boost in spending would be elections for Green Bay, with an almost 90% increase from $178,000 to almost $335,000 in preparation for the midterm elections next year.
Yeah, so I think as most folks understand, elections or election costs are very cyclical in our communities. In Wisconsin, we have, you know, many more elections in the even years than we do in the odd. So that's sort of a typical increase that you would see in an even year.
So, Mayor Genrich, you and the city have faced complaints about mishandling the 2020 election for using a grant from a nonprofit called the Center for Technology and Civic Life to help. There was a call for your resignation, and a most recent complaint was filed just a couple weeks ago on November 4th. How do you respond to these?
Right, you know, it's difficult to continue to respond to the disinformation and misinformation that's being spread by very powerful individuals around the state and country. You know, we did everything lawfully and legally and fairly in the city of Green Bay, as I think was the case just about all across the state of Wisconsin. You know, these grant dollars were approved and accepted unanimously by our common council. And so it's just unfortunate that we're continuing to have to deal with these baseless complaints because, you know, they're just a distraction from the actual business that we need to do here in the city of Green Bay.
Is that grant money that you would take again?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was tremendously beneficial to our electoral process in November of 2020. I think the experience that people had really couldn't have been much better. We, you know, we can always improve on things, but the reviews that we received were incredibly positive. You know, the idea of conducting a presidential election in the midst of a pandemic still is sort of mind-boggling. So the fact that we were able to accept these grant dollars, use them in a nonpartisan way to reward the poll workers that stepped up and to serve our democracy, to purchase equipment that we needed to process the you know, the huge number of ballots that were coming in. You know, we wouldn't have been able to do what we did with this grant support. And as I said, you know, this was not controversial when it was accepted. Our council has a lot of vigorous disagreements on and debates on all kinds of issues, and this was something that was supported unanimously. So again, it continues to be really unfortunate to see people that that should know better spreading disinformation about our process.
Finally, Mayor Eric Genrich, with tackling issues that are not unique to Green Bay this morning with us, tell us what's great about Green Bay and what makes it so unique.
Gosh, I mean, that's a long list.
you know, sorry, we only have a minute left.
Yeah, right. I'm born and raised in Green Bay and, you know, spent a little bit of time away in Madison, but otherwise I've been here my entire life, and it's an incredibly special place. Obviously, everybody knows about the Green Bay Packers. That's really what puts us on the map internationally. But we're also on the largest freshwater estuary in the world, which is kind of an amazing fact and something many people aren't familiar with. But really, you know, it's the people. And I think, you know, the people, you know, is the subject of the conversation when people come here for whatever reason, if it's the Packers or if it's to enjoy the Bay and the Fox River and all of our natural resources. We're known as a very welcoming people, and that's really what makes us special. There's a real blue collar work ethic and just an openness to all points of views and perspectives and backgrounds, and so we've got a very bright future in front of us, and just very privileged to be able to serve in this capacity.
The mayor of Green Bay, Eric Genrich. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. So what do you want to ask the Republican U.S. Senator representing Wisconsin? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and we are one of only six states to have split political party representation in the U.S. Senate. And Pew Research says that's the fewest since the ratification of the 17th Amendment and the direct election of our senators over a century ago. Our guest is Senator Ron Johnson, and you're invited to join us now at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Senator Johnson was elected to the Senate first in 2010 and would be up for re-election next year if he decides to run again. Senator Johnson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Lee. I hope you're doing well.
You as well, sir. And let's start first with a tragedy that occurred Sunday evening in Waukesha at the Christmas parade, killing five, injuring more than 40 others. What are your thoughts about this incident?
Well, it was a horrific tragedy. I was down in Waukesha last night for the interfaith prayer vigil. I don't know how many people attended. It had to be at least 1,000 people, which is, what you'd expect out of a Wisconsin community, people coming together. Praying for the healing of bodies, of souls, of our communities, our state, our nation, quite honestly. So Waukesha will get through this. I'm sure they will. But you know, I think what compounds the tragedy is, as we find out, you know, who was driving the car, his extensive criminal background. I think the fact of the matter is he probably shouldn't have been on the streets. This probably should never have happened. So that just adds to the tragedy.
Do you think there will be changes ahead for the sake of public safety as we approach the holidays, Senator?
I'm not quite understanding your...
Just wondering if you... whether or not there will be public changes to public safety, reassessment of public safety in the aftermath of the tragedy.
Yeah, I think we've been looking at our criminal justice system literally for decades. And we've made, some reforms. Some reforms I supported. For example, the disparity between crack and powder cocaine was bizarre, and that's, some of those things have been fixed. I think we need to take a look at who we're incarcerating and who we're not incarcerating. I think this revolving door criminal justice system, in some cases, it's almost a catch and release, something similar that we're seeing on the southern border. I don't think that can continue. We need to put people in jail who are violent, that represent a real risk to society, and maybe take a look at some of the people we are incarcerating for a very long period of time that don't represent that same risk. If there's an issue of overcrowding in jails, need to look at all these things. But we just should not allow violent criminals to repeat offend, let them out on bail, with a backed up court system. It's not a legitimate excuse, quite honestly. And as a result, we have at least five people dead. Hopefully, the people who are injured will recover from their injuries. But what unfortunately will people never forget what they witnessed. As horrific as the deaths, the injuries were. I keep thinking of those little children sitting on the curb waiting to see Santa, watching the dancing grannies and the high school bands. They will never ever forget what happened. They'll never be able to erase that horrific slaughter from their minds. And that's, you know, again, that's just another part of the tragedy.
You have a line to U.S. Senator Ron Johnson at 1-800-642-1234, where Jeff from Delafield standing by. Jeff, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. Senator Johnson, I was wondering if you could comment on what may or may not be in the Build Back Better bill in regards to immigration reform or even benefits for what we might call illegal immigrants. Thank you.
Well, I haven't, you know, poured over the House version. I know we don't, I haven't really even seen any kind of language on the Senate version. That's still being negotiated. There should not be a change to immigration policy. It would violate our Senate rules to, you know, stick a policy change like that doesn't really relate to the budget, or where the budget is just incidental to what they're trying to do policy-wise. Our immigration system is broken. We need to fix it. We're a nation of immigrants. I just wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal talking about if we're going to experience the kind of economic growth we need to dig ourselves out of this enormous debt hole, we're going to have to grow our economy. And a huge component of economic growth is a growing labor supply, which we don't have right now. So that would infer that we need a legal immigration system that's really tied to work and to contributions to our economy, and we don't have that right now. And this uncontrolled illegal flow is the worst possible event here in terms of stabilizing our economy, providing actually getting to a solution on immigration. So, you know, that's very unfortunate. It's one of the real tragedies of President Biden dismantling the successful border control policies of the previous administration, and now resulting in this massive illegal flow, people coming in this country now undocumented. They're the ones that can be exploited by employers. It's illegal immigrants that can depress American wages as opposed to controlling it through a legal process. So, but running it through a reconciliation process, a massive spending bill that's just going to add to inflation, is not the way to change immigration policy.
Get the sense you will not be supporting the Build Back Better proposal in the Senate.
No, we have inflation already growing. It's not temporary. I was in business for 30 years. It was like pulling teeth, getting a price increase through. Now price increases are expected and they're being accepted. That is a sign of inflation becoming endemic. You know, I started my business in the midst of a stagflation. Very difficult cycle to break, and I think we're in there right now. Slow economic growth. Rising inflation. We see, you know, the increased gasoline prices, food prices. That is caused by too much money chasing too few goods. And the more Democrats spend money we don't have, they're just adding to that money supply. While at the same time, we're probably moving toward a over-regulation of the economy, which is not helpful in terms of getting goods actually supplied. So it's a double whammy. It's a very dangerous economic territory that we're treading in here.
Let's go back to your calls this morning and your chance to ask Senator Ron Johnson your questions at 1-800-642-1234, where Colleen is standing by from Darlington. Colleen, good morning. You're on the morning show with Senator Ron Johnson.
Hello, Ron. I was just wondering if you thought the January 6th attack was actually a terrible attack on our democracy, and should every one of them be held accountable?
Colleen, thank you.
Colleen, thanks for the question. Yeah, I condemned it that day. I found the violence repugnant. I found the racial slurs repulsive. So I condemned it. I continue to condemn it. But I also condemn violence during the summer riots as well. But I also defend, whether it's Black Lives Matter and those individuals that peacefully protested during the summer, the same way I defend people that came to D.C. to peacefully protest, even though they were, you know, basically trying to put pressure on people like me to vote the way I wasn't going to vote. So, again, I defend people's First Amendment right to peacefully assemble, petition the government, but I abhor and I condemn all forms of violence.
Thank you, Senator. Last week, Wisconsin Assemblyman Tim Ramthune formally proposed a resolution to decertify the 2020 election and reclaim Wisconsin's 10 electoral votes from President Biden. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I think it's imperative that we restore confidence in our election system for everybody. This is an unsustainable state of affairs where at the end of the 2016 election, you know, half the country didn't view that election as a legitimate result. And then 24 years later here, the other half is saying this is not legitimate. You know, we have the pandemic. We expanded dramatically absentee voting, which the Jimmy Carter, James Baker Commission warned us was probably the greatest avenue for election fraud, while we also relaxed so many of the controls over absentee balloting. And so there are legitimate concerns about the irregularities, observers not being able to observe, ballot drop boxes. You know, more and more information is going to be coming out. It's difficult to investigate these things. But the goal should be to restore confidence for everybody, for every Republican, independent, Democrat, no matter who wins. Okay, that's a legitimate election. We move on. And if you don't like the result, work harder to win the next election. So I think the goal needs to be restore confidence in our election for everybody.
Well, how does, just quoting you from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel here earlier this month, don't listen to the Wisconsin Elections Commission anymore. Their guidances are null and void. What does that do in regards to election integrity?
Well, take a look at the Legislative Audit Bureau that basically talked about how the Wisconsin Election Commission issued these guidances that were contrary to state law. And so, no, I've completely lost confidence in the Wisconsin Election Commission. When it comes to federal election, the Constitution assigns responsibility to set the times, places, and manner of elections with the state legislature. And so I think the state legislature needs to reassert its authority, make sure that in the federal elections, our election clerks follow state law, not guidances that are contrary to state law. And we've got some pretty good state election law here. Now, we may need to pass some new laws. We may need to put some more controls in place so that every legitimate vote counts and that no legitimate vote is canceled by a fraudulent count. Again, the only way I can, you know, see of restoring confidence for everybody in elections is to take a look at what's happened in the past, honestly, and then if there are some issues, if there are problems, correct them. If there weren't problems, you know, if we can explain an irregularity, explain it and say, okay, that wasn't a problem. Let's look at something else. Let's move forward and have confidence in our election system.
Senator Johnson, the report from the nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau didn't find any evidence of widespread fraud or abuse in Wisconsin's 2020 elections. Nursing homes were not allowing in election workers, and nursing home residents had to be given an opportunity to exercise their right to vote. While the state law requires absentee ballots to be mailed when election workers are unable to make visits, the commission voted to send absentee ballots to nursing homes last year. What was nefarious there?
Well, we had balloting in the park. You know, we had election clerk hearing absentee ballots. We had this, you know, issue of indefinitely confined voters that didn't provide voter ID. Again, there are a number of issues that are just contrary to Wisconsin state law. Now, you know, I realize that every law can be, you know, people can argue over exactly what it says. So that's one of the things we might need to do is tighten up so that everybody understands exactly what we mean by election law.
But, The New York Times.
Again, what I'm talking about is the process and the fact that Wisconsin Election Commission did issue guidances that were contrary to state law. We have a member of the Election Commission saying that they were going to give guidance that was illegal. I mean, it's admitted. It's on videotape. So, again, my goal is to restore confidence in our elections for every Wisconsinite. There should be nothing partisan about this. It's also the way, for example, many people make it a partisan issue to provide voter ID. But if you take a look at national polls, about 80% of Americans agree with voter ID because they don't want their legitimate vote canceled by a fraudulent one. So they want some controls in place to ensure that their legitimate vote isn't canceled out by a fraudulent vote. Again, I'm looking prospectively. It's very difficult to prove fraud. It's very difficult to prove. You have to investigate. You have to do it almost person by person. You know, once an absentee ballot is separated from the envelope, it's pretty difficult to prove fraud. So that's why, you know, people say, oh, but we're proving fraud. You saw it in the nursing homes.
Well, where are the charges?
What I'm talking about is the process that will restore confidence prospectively in upcoming elections.
U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, our guest, taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest for the rest of this hour is U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, taking your calls and questions at 1-800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Daniel in Madison, you're on the Morning Show this morning with Senator Ron Johnson.
Hi, good morning. I just want to say to Senator Ron Johnson that they know the truth, that there was nothing wrong with the election. They are just trying to appease an angry God, Donald Trump. They know very well that whatever they are trying to prove is not there. But they just want to keep flaming the fire of Donald Trump so he can support them in raising funds. Senator Ron Johnson knows the truth. That's all they are trying to do.
Daniel, thank you. And let me pivot a little bit here, Senator, and ask you about the role of Donald Trump in the future of the Republican Party.
Well, first of all, let me say I completely disagree with Daniel. I'll restate my goal again. I think it's a goal that most Wisconsinites, most Americans would share, is we all need to have confidence in the legitimacy of the election and that our legitimate vote isn't canceled out by a fraudulent vote. That requires controls on the front side, which we have enacted within Wisconsin law, but we issued guidances that were contrary to that law. So again, we need to just institute those controls so that people have confidence.
But let me ask you, whatever
role Donald Trump wants to play, that's up to Donald Trump, not up to me.
The quote from Reid Epstein's article in the New York Times over the weekend about the election integrity in Wisconsin has a quote from you saying that you suppose some counties will handle our elections one way and other counties will handle it another. I don't know how that aids election integrity and how you see this playing out.
It doesn't. Again, that was a hypothetical question he asked me.
Okay.
If the legislature actually reasserts its authority over the elections and issues its own guidances based on state law, and if WEC then goes ahead and issues its own guidance, you know, what's going to happen? And so I answered a hypothetical question. I probably shouldn't answer hypothetical questions. I hope that doesn't happen. But I said, you know, barring some authoritarian, you know, whether a court intervenes or whatever, I would imagine some counties would follow the state legislature guidance, which is what I believe they should do, and some might follow what WEC says. I mean, again, I think that'd be a very tragic result. I think, as I stated, the state legislature, there in terms of federal elections now, I'm talking federal elections, the Constitution vests them with the authority to set the times, place, and manner of elections. It never mentions the governor. It says the state legislatures. So I would take the position that they write the law. They should issue the resolutions or guidances, and this is how our elections ought to be handled. By the way, I wouldn't think there'd be much of a departure from what is already in state law. It's just like follow the law. Don't follow the guidances because they're contrary to state law. But again, you know, it does seem, and I, you know, apologize to your audience because I think they, you know, probably not as supportive of my viewpoint as I'd like to see sometimes. But it does seem the Democrats want to make it easier to cheat in elections. I mean, they keep pushing the boundaries of what's allowable. And, you know, again, as the Carter-Baker Commission, Jimmy Carter, James Baker said, the greatest area for potential fraud is in mail-in and absentee balloting. And that's exactly what Democrats want to do. They want to keep pushing absentee balloting.
We have states with mail-in ballots.
That's going to reduce confidence in our election. I don't think that's a good thing.
Our guest is U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. He's taking your calls this morning at 1-800-642-1234, where Bob in Kaukauna is standing by. Bob, good morning. You're on with Senator Johnson.
Oh, hi, Senator Johnson. You used to have on your website a number that showed the federal deficit increasing throughout the Obama administration. And then as soon as the Republicans got control of Congress and the Senate, they passed a tax cut, which then took the deficit, which was about $400 billion a year, up to $1 trillion a year. How can you justify that?
Well, appreciate the question. First of all, the only way we're going to reduce deficits and debt is to grow our economy. And the way you grow your economy is you don't overregulate it and you have a competitive tax system. So we were well on our way to completely paying for that tax cut through robust economic growth prior to the COVID recession. I think we'd have easily paid for that $1.5 trillion static score, wasn't a dynamic score, and we would have paid for that tax cut with robust economic growth. And once you grow your economy, that's just revenue that just keeps coming into the federal government at a higher level. So I mean, that's the overall approach to economic growth.
Senator Johnson, YouTube gave you a 7-day suspension for your account regarding comments made in a video saying the coronavirus vaccine was unsafe. Be interested in knowing what your reaction is to the suspension, as well as to the other medical professionals who have said that you have repeated incorrect and sometimes misleading information about the pandemic.
Well, first of all, I never uttered those words. I never said the vaccine was unsafe. I said it's not as safe or as effective as we all hoped and prayed it would be. I'm just using the statistics off of the government's own vaccine adverse event reporting system.
So that, that's a self-reporting system, Senator, that anybody can go on and just put something in. It's not meant to be a data set. It's meant to be a catch-all. So it's a public health tool, but it's not supposed to be a data set.
So, Lee, are you going to interview me or argue with me?
I'm just asking.
So the VAERS system was touted in October of 2020 in about an 8-hour video teleconference is going to be the go-to system that's going to provide the safety signals. If for example, there was just one adverse event that results in even a couple days of lost time, there's going to be a CDC representative on the phone talking to that person. I mean, the truth is it's difficult to actually upload things in the VAERS system. Doctors kind of avoid doing it because it takes like 30 minutes. And so there are two big complaints about the VAERS system. A, it doesn't prove causation. I agree with that. But also it dramatically understates adverse events. So here's the numbers currently off the VAERS system. Worldwide over almost 19,000 deaths. I think we're 18,800 plus some deaths over the 10, 11 months that the vaccine's been in the place. That compares, by the way, with on average, over 26 years, about 78 deaths per year reported for the seasonal flu vaccine, 78 versus over 18,800. Total adverse events is now approaching 900,000. And again, one of the complaints is it dramatically understates it. So all I said is I'm asking the CDC, why aren't you paying attention to your own VAERS system? I think 5,800 of those over 18,000 deaths occurred on day 0, 1, or 2 following the vaccination. So I think the CDC is in a state of denial. The other part of my event that has been censored on YouTube is I'm just allowing people who've suffered vaccine injuries to tell their story.
Senator Johnson.
Again, there's no information in this. This is all true, but it's a truth that the mainstream media, the social media, the Biden administration, the health agencies doesn't want to be told. And so they just throw these pejoratives out at me saying, what is misinformation?
Senator,
tell me one thing I just said now that isn't true.
Senator Johnson.
It's all completely true. It's all based on data from the government's own websites, which they are ignoring. But go ahead, Lee.
We are out of time. I want to thank you for yours this morning, as always.
Okay, take care. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
You as well. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson joining us this morning. I'm Lee Rayburn, and for Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.